Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second? Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. The Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast presents the Community Highlight. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.
Getting into how to buy apartment buildings, first and foremost, I want to parallel this to something that you may already be doing, right? When you look at larger deals, it can sometimes scare you a little bit. You can say, man, these numbers, they've added another zero. They must be, somebody must have done a miscalculation. But what it really is just expounding upon what you're already doing from a single family or a duplex, triplex, quadplex, and multiplying the systems that you put in place for those into something larger. And so if you're already doing some sort of investment like that, I want to encourage you to start to look to larger because you're already learning the skills that are going to help you. And I actually want to highlight that a little bit. So what you're looking at on the screen right now is the first home I ever bought. It's a triplex, right? In Louisville, Kentucky. Now, when I purchased it, it did not look as good as these photos. These are the listing photos from when I sold it. Believe me, there was a lot of pain and strife. There was carpet everywhere, bug issues, pest issues. I had to replace a roof, replace siding, all of that. But we made it, still here. And this is what it looked like when we ended up selling it. And I can tell you that when I started my career, I did not first think about going into five plus or buying a 12 plex or anything like that. I was like, hey, how can I start with the littlest amount down? And how can I learn how to actually manage this thing? And when I scraped together $5,000, which was all I had to put down a down payment on this house hack of $190K and moved into one unit, rented the other two out, and effectively lived for free. I can tell you that one of the things that I learned for this home is that I would not have been able to buy that 12 unit in 2018 had I not started here. Because what this did was gave me the foundation and some of the contacts that are needed to feel comfortable moving into the larger properties. And so the main takeaway on this slide here is that the same principles that are needed to successfully run a small multifamily are the same ones needed to run a large multifamily. And I wanted to take an opportunity to also highlight that this was Louisville, Kentucky, and I was swagged out for the Derby. So this is just a little fun in front of the triplex. The reason my head's down is because I spent all my money on the siding and the roof. I was going to put everything I had on lucky number 11 to try to get it back. So yes, there are going to be some pain and strife, but it's all worth it in the end if you're able to work through that. But all jokes aside, looking at the similarities between the small units, residential units, which is 1 to 4 units, and the larger units, I wanted to highlight really three categories. And please, anybody on the line, as well as Sam, feel free to jump in with any questions here if I'm missing anything. But the first piece that I look at is the contractors, right? When you have a small multifamily or small residential unit, you're going to need to build a list of contractors, right? You're going to want to have landscapers. You're going to want to have handyman that can go and fix, you know, a leaky toilet or a pipe. You're going to want to have plumbers. You're going to want to have roofers. You're going to want to have siding people. Like individuals that I met throughout those first couple of properties are the same ones that I was able to leverage and use on the larger multis and actually learn, hey, this is a good contractor. This one, not so much. Hey, I had a great experience with this person, and with this person, not so much. And so the more you're able to leverage some of the contacts that you create through the smaller properties, especially if you're staying in that same general area, the more it's going to help you on the larger. And furthermore, even just learning how to vet people, right? I would not have felt comfortable doing even more investing in Louisville from a distance, from thousands of miles away, if I had not started small and been able to build up a team and start to vet individuals to know who I could call on when different issues or things would arise. The second piece, and probably one of the most important, is tenant management, right? Because you can buy a screaming deal. You can buy a house that's worth $500K for, you know, $250, but if you don't manage it correctly, it's going to start losing its value quickly and you're not going to be able to get the right tenants in. And so when you look at the tenant management piece, you need to have some systems in place for doing this yourself if you're starting out small. and understand through self-management what it looks like to have a good property manager when you start to go bigger. Because the more units you have, you're most likely going to want to hire that piece out, and you're going to want to know how to screen and make sure that this person has the right systems in place to actually manage your properties. And so I can tell you that for me, what I utilized back in the day, and this is when I was actually renting out properties myself, right, and kind of managing it, is I utilized something called a rent talk to help screen tenants. And when we got to this point, it'd be after a tenant submitted an application, after they've already qualified for our documented guidelines. You want to have everything documented. And when they got to the point of, hey, they're looking at the lease, getting ready to sign, I would actually be hands-on when I was managing and walk them through something called a rent talk. And this rent talk is a slide that I'm more than happy to share with Sam as well as this group. And what it allowed you to do is weed out the individuals that were not going to be what you were looking for. For example, right? I made it clear that, hey, we want to have you stay for a minimum of 3 years. The only reason we want people to move is because they're buying a house. And other than that, we want to give you clean housing and things of that nature.
Are you looking for a community of like-minded individuals and access to experts in real estate? Yeah. Are you interested in real estate but need more support and guidance?
You know who it is.
The Black Real Estate Dialogue presents the Real Estate Investing Community. No matter how much or how little real estate experience you have, we've created a community for you because your perspective is important. All right, tell me, where's the number one place where you can do Q&A with experienced guest speakers 2 times per month? How about unlimited access to past guest speakers' recordings? What about a private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everybody in the community to share resources and support each other? Head on over to blackrealestatedialogue.com. That's blackrealestatedialogue.com. It's the real estate investing community presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Come join us today.
We also made it clear that we have an expectation of the tenants that are going to stay with us, that if we're providing this clean, secure housing, that you're not going to damage our house, right? You're not going to take for granted some of the things that we've put in. And we also spell out like, hey, this is how long some of these items are supposed to last. So if you're dragging your hands across the wall of a freshly painted unit and the paint now needs to be repainted, that's going to come out of security deposit, right? And these are things that you want to make clear up front when you're having conversations with tenants and things of that nature. And we're going to scroll through this relatively quickly, but again, it spells out exactly what we're doing, what they're doing. And what I love about this is at the end, it actually has some screenshots of the management portal. And so there's two ways to go about tenant management. One is you can self-manage. And I would highly recommend that if you don't have any management experience, that you at some level do a little bit of self-management to start out, because that's the best way to really learn the ins and outs of your units and to understand what you're looking for in a good property manager. And so this is a system that I used, and this is what the resident portal looked like. Systems like this will allow you to scale. I was actually able to manage up to 15 units from 1,000 miles away before moving it over to property management to continue to grow because I had systems like this. This is something called Buildium. I know there's some other new and free software out there through Zillow and Rent Manager and all this other stuff that wasn't available when I was starting out. But basically what this system allowed you to do is have tenants pay their rent online. Nobody was coming to hand me cash or mail a check, right? And you can see at the bottom right that what was in the lease was actually also emulated on this system. So if somebody did not pay on the first, and it hit midnight on the second, they'd automatically be late and a 10% late fee would kick in. And the reason I mention this is you want to have these defined systems in place when you start to grow in units and go after these large apartment complexes, because you don't want to run into any issues of treating one tenant differently than the other. You need to have your systems, you need to have your standard, and you need to stick to the lease and to your standard when you're managing these tenants and or when you're managing the property managers that are managing the tenants. At the end of the day, you are not the bad guy. You want to have a robust lease and make that lease be the bad guy when tenants ask, hey, you know, can I pay you on the 7th? Sure, but that's going to be late. There's going to be a 10% fee added and $5 per day, right? It's not us. if we go to the bank and ask them, hey man, you know, I'm running a little bit behind. My tenant said they're going to pay me on the 7th. You know, can I pay you on the 15th? Believe me, they're not going to go for that, right? And so you just got to make that clear up front. And one of the other pieces that was a major key to helping keep some tenants for a long time, and I've had some tenants that stayed with me for 4+ years, is offering an incentive, especially for your really good tenants. One of the most expensive things you're going to have when you move into multifamily, and I believe me, I've experienced this firsthand, is turnover. If you have a couple units go vacant and you have to get a new tenant in there, not only do you have to completely turn that unit and get contractors in there to fix certain items, to get it repainted, to get it relisted, which is all expense for you, but now you're starting to show new tenants and you're not making any money on that unit while it's vacant. And so if you go vacant for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, trying to do these repairs and things of that nature, it's all money out of your pocket. So it's well worth it to you to give a discount to tenants that have not violated the lease, that have paid on time consistently, and incentivize them to stay with you. Now, what this discount does not mean is that you're not going to raise rents each year. This is another mistake I see a lot of owners do, is they'll say, hey, I love the tenants that I have in there. I'm just going to keep the rent the same, and they'll start to fall behind, right? And what the greatest value that you're going to have from a larger multifamily property is the fact that its value is determined by the NOI, right? And so I'm going to get into the 12-plex that I purchased a little bit, but long story short, when I purchased that house, I purchased it for $500K. It was 12 units. A lot of it was Section 8. There was bed bug issues. There were structural issues. I had to replace roof, siding, and it comes back to that triplex, right? Having done that before, I knew who to call, who to get quotes from, and who I could bring in to do that. And so I felt more comfortable taking those tasks on because I'd done it before. But one of the major value adds that I saw is the fact that they were bringing in, I think, roughly about $6,000 a month on those 12 units, but they were paying for all the utilities. The utilities were separately metered, but they were like, you know what? We don't want to deal with it. They bought it years ago in their family, and they're like, hey, we're just going to pay for all the utilities. Now, the rents in that area should have had that place bringing in not $6,000 a month, but $7,200 a month. And so I knew, hey, with the tenant turns and things of that nature and upgrading some of the units, we can raise that price. And not only that, but if we just shift the electric and gas over to the tenant at the end of each lease, that is going to significantly increase the NOI and give us a stronger exit. And so you got to look for opportunities like that. And to that point, circling back, that's why you want to continue to increase the rent each year. And what I typically recommend is just increase it at the rate of where we actually want inflation to go, right? And so inflation should be like 2-3%. So every year I would increase rent by about 3%. And you can see that depicted here. And I'd actually show this to the tenant, like, hey, so it's kind of like subliminally letting them know, like, hey, I'm going to increase rent, but there's a benefit to you to stick with me.
Yes, if you want to hear the rest of this session and many others, click the link below to go to blackrealestatedialogue.com to join the Bread Investing community. We'll see you here next week.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. So just like you, he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.